Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodovnik. Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about unexpected science history.
Well, that's unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumya Ektay, The Fifth Floor, Farnak Amidi Sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. The war in Ukraine is well into its third year. The realities of the war are felt all over the country. Brutal missile attacks, power cuts and blackouts are all things that many Ukrainians have to deal with. And with the continued fighting, the realities of conscription challenge the country more and more. In 2022, almost overnight, all adult men were called to join the military to defend their homeland. People's lives have changed in so many ways. Hundreds of thousands of men have left their towns and cities to serve the military, and the rest of the country has had to try and cope with the consequences. So, how has this changed Ukrainian society?
In Lviv, I would say, if you see men on the streets, there are probably or retired or students. Recently, I was in Kyiv and it's another atmosphere. I was really shocked, so many men on the street, but it's a huge privilege to be a woman in Ukraine in these times.
Even more men are needed to defend the country and go to the front line. So for now, these problems aren't likely to go away. Daria Taradai and Ilona Chromluk in Ukraine and Anastasia Zanuda, who is currently based in Warsaw, are three journalists from BBC Ukrainian and have been covering different angles of this story. Welcome to The Fifth Floor, all the three of you. Daria, I'm going to start with you. At the beginning of the war, what was the attitude like towards joining the army?
At the very beginning of the war, of course, it was a great shock for everybody. And I would say that like the population of Ukraine literally was divided into two parts. One part of people, it was mostly women with children or without children, women with elderly people who rushed somewhere to the Western Ukraine or Central Ukraine or abroad. And the other big part of Ukrainian population, mostly male population, but female, of course, as well, they rushed to the conscription offices where they could have joined army or different forces or like territorial forces, even sometimes not official, who were expected to take part in the defense of Ukrainian cities and villages to defend Ukraine. And we saw numerous videos, numerous messages, numerous stories of people who were just standing in the lines for hours and hours waiting to be conscripted.
Mm. And would you say there were people from all walks of life joining, or was it from a specific background that were going to these conscription offices?
We do not have official data to prove my words now, but my impression is that absolutely different groups of people. Those people who never ever were thinking about joining army, yeah? Those people who didn't have any military experience. Those people who were before businessmen, journalists, interpreters from absolutely different spheres. IT specialists, HR specialists. Absolutely different people.
And in the beginning, of course, as you mentioned, there was this sense of urgency that you need to go and defend your homeland. But it must be really hard to maintain that kind of enthusiasm and get people to join voluntarily.
Yes. I think that's true, and we also can see it from the different social reactions, from the social discourse, and from the state's attempt to recruit people, which also means that there are some troubles with that.
And with this new law, you know, there is a new law that they introduced for the conscription in May. Does that reflect that? And what is this new law?
Yeah, it is a very long story, because in reality, those things that men are required to do according to this new law, actually, they were required to do these things even before the law was adopted. So all Ukrainian men were required to go from time to time in different periods of their life to the conscription offices to update information about them, about the place where they live, about their family situation, the number of children, etc., etc., in order for state to know how many male population of different age, of different groups, the state has. In reality, there was a very long tradition caused by different reasons why people avoided to do that. And also the state, I would say, failed to create in time a good, updated and normal registry of all male population of Ukraine. And when this big war started, the state, to be honest, didn't know how many men the state can
provide.
Count on. Yeah. All these efforts, all these new laws, all these changes in the legislation were aimed to make people to come to the conscription offices, to make them to do it again. The general intention is to make harder for men not to come to the conscription office and not to update their information.
And Ilona, I want to get to you right now. Do you know what happens exactly the moment you get called to go to the conscription office? What happens? Do you have to drop off everything and just go straight to the office, or is there a window of time for you?
It depends in which way you obtain this call. For example, if you have a paper about mobilization by mail, or for example, a military officers come to your house and say like, oh, we have to inform you that you are mobilized and so on. By law, you have 14 days. If you, for example, will be on the street and the military office come to you and check your documentation, you will have a call immediately and you will not have time to be packed. I know people who were on their military training in their like a company t-shirts, you know. So these people were going to the job and they were just caught on the street and they come to the military training right in their company t-shirts. So there is no way to say like how much time you have.
So there is a possibility that if you are eligible for this conscription, that you will be stopped on the streets.
Yes, yes. Actually, state tried to inspire men to go to army voluntarily. And they said recently that if you will come to the military office voluntarily, you will have 2 months to prepare. So men have to choose what they want to be caught surprisingly at any circumstances, or you choose to come voluntarily and then you will have 2 months.
So they're giving them initiatives to encourage them to go forward voluntarily. Daria, I know you spoke to some men who are trying to avoid the draft and not go to the army. What did they tell you?
They all have different stories. Some of them, they say that they are afraid. It's like normal human fear. You can lose your life. You can lose your health. You can lose your hands, legs, etc. And that nobody will need you. You will just end your life in misery. We have a lot of stories in social discourse about brave and heroic military commanders. But at the same time, we have stories about not very clever decisions of military commanders who were risking the lives of their soldiers. Some people probably are afraid of also of being taken into Russian captivity. People are afraid of the situation when they do not know for how long they are being taken into the military service.
And that is the case, actually, because there is an indefinite end to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when people in 2022, they rushed to the conscription offices, they didn't think about it because it was a shock and they understood that they need to do something. Something must be done. Yeah, you know, this pressure. But now, of course, people are thinking about it. They have families, they have children, and they think, if I go there for an indefinite period of time, what will happen to my family? What will happen to me? What will happen to my business, etc.? So people are thinking about that. Some people say that, so such quotations, I was not made for military service. I don't know nothing. I will be useless. I will not be able to help people at the front line. Some people are afraid of the very short preparations, like I would be taken to the military service and on the next day I would be at the front line with no proper preparation, with no proper training, with no proper weapons.
It is absolutely scary. If you're just a normal civilian, you know, all of a sudden you have to take arm and go on the front line and join a war. It's absolutely terrifying. I assume the army is also not sitting back and doing nothing. They are trying to encourage people to join. What are they doing?
There are different initiatives to start different advertising campaigns to show people that if not we, then who? If you don't want to go to Ukrainian army, maybe tomorrow you would be forced to go to Russian army. So the state is trying to press to push people. This is one level, but the other level is the initiatives of the different military departments. Messages that they give are like, we guarantee you 60 days of training. So they are trying to address the fears that people already have. We guarantee that our military commanders will protect you. We have equipment, we have weapons, we will give you everything you need. The other thing is that we don't only need those people who will actually fight. We need technical specialists. We need IT specialists. We need those who can help to develop different programs for the drones. They are trying to attract people who are afraid actually of fighting.
And what have you heard about the men trying to hide or trying to avoid the conscription? What do they do to avoid it?
There are different strategies, yeah. Even from the official state communication, we see that a certain number of men, they are trying to leave the country in illegal ways. Those people who are caught in the forests of Carpathian Mountains, which borders with the European Union, or those people who were caught near the river Tisa, which people try to cross to get also to the countries of the European Union, these people are stopped and caught by the border guards. My personal impression is that there is constant attempts. We cannot estimate again the number because the state also doesn't want maybe to count. And of course, those cases which we hear about, they are unsuccessful. We don't know anything about the successful cases. Yeah, so people, when they get abroad, they are just trying to keep low profile.
Yeah, be invisible.
Yeah. The other strategy for those people who do not try to leave country, they try to hide within country. One of my colleagues interviewed a man who lives in Odessa, and his strategy is to stay at home as long as possible, not to travel in other parts of Ukraine and to go outside only with his small daughter. Because when he's alone with his daughter, he thinks that the chances that he can be taken to the conscription office is much, much lower. Yeah, where people exchange the information about the streets or parts of the cities where today conscription officers are checking documents. It is illegal in Ukraine. So the state is trying to fight with these groups, but they appear, they use different metaphors, euphemisms, not to show that they are exchanging this information, but they exist.
And Dario, I understand that there are some people who even forge and fake documents to show that they are not suitable for conscription drafting.
Yeah, this is also one of the way to try to avoid it. Usually, why they forge this document? They want to leave country, but to make it look legal. Yes, not to cross the border illegally, but to cross the border with fake documents. There are some reasons that can allow a male to leave country. For example, if a person has three or more children under 18 years, then this man is allowed to go abroad. It is expected that he can come back, but he's allowed.
So there also must be a lot of like strategic marriages with women who have children. And
we don't know, because like people don't want to talk about it. I would probably say that for some families who were thinking about the third child, and who were hesitating. In some cases, I can suggest that it was like their final push. And also one more legal reason is when you have a child with disability. And here I think the number of these fake marriages is high when there is, for example, a single mother with a child with a disability.
And what is the punishment if people get caught trying to dodge the draft?
It depends very much under which circumstances people were caught. I mean, if people were trying to use fake documents to leave country, then they will be persecuted for this forging of documents. If a man is trying to leave the country, like physically to cross the border in the forest or river, then this is another case. And then I think it's up to 8 years can be, depending again on the different circumstances. But again, from the official information, we can see that those men who are caught while illegal crossing the border, the first thing that the state does with them, the state sends them to the conscription offices. And this is being criticized a lot by those people who are already in the military service, because for them it's like military service is regarded as a punishment.
So Ilona, would you say that this conscription and trying to avoid it, is this something that you see all over the country, or some parts of the country are more affected by it?
There is no actually statistics about it, but like from my personal experience, depends from city to city. For example, I live in Lviv, and in Lviv, I would say if you see men on the streets, there are probably or retired or students. If you see a man of military age, I'm like looking at him and like, brave one.
What are you doing here? What about you, Daria? Do you see a change in the demography of the city that you're living in?
I haven't noticed such changes, but I have noticed, for example, when I was trying to arrange a meeting with a child who is a friend of my son and with his family, I've noticed that his father was avoiding public places and he suggested, let's go to the cinema and then after that, let's go home. He openly says that he's trying to avoid possible meetings with the conscription officers. So I haven't noticed it on the streets because like during the last year, I've spent the majority of my time in Kyiv, which is actually the biggest city in Ukraine. But I've noticed the changes in the patterns, how people behave.
Mm-hmm. I would say that recently I was in Kyiv and it's another atmosphere than, for example, in Lviv. It's like I was really shocked, so many men on the street. But when you are a woman, it's a huge privilege to be a woman in Ukraine in these times. You don't see these changes. You know, for men, it's always like risky to come anywhere in public places.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Der Disney Plus Serientipp.
Hey, hier spricht Meredith Grey, direkt aus dem Grey Sloan Memorial Hospital. Wir suchen Verstärkung, denn hier kommen viele neue Fälle rein. Unsere Station ist voll mit außergewöhnlichen Patienten, jungen Ärzten in Ausbildung und viel zwischenmenschlichem Drama. Also schau schnell vorbei.
Grey's Anatomy, die neuen Folgen und alle Staffeln nur auf Disney Plus streamen. Abo schon ab 5,99 € pro Monat. Und nun viel Spaß beim Podcast, wünscht Disney Plus.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodovnik. Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about Unexpected Science History.
Well, that's unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Service. I'm Farhana Khamidi, and in this episode of The Fifth Floor, we are hearing about the effects of conscription in Ukraine. Anastasia, can you just tell me about this, the impact of this whole situation on the economy?
Ukraine receives a lot of military help from the partners. We all know that. But when it comes to money, it cannot spend Western financial aid on war. Therefore, all that Ukrainian economy produces now is spent on defense, is spent on war. Because from the very beginning, the partners say that we would help you with the social expenses, but you have to cover all the war expenses by yourself. So we have very, very simple budget now. Everything which economy produces goes to the war, and the other half of the budget expenses, non-military, they are covered with the money which Ukraine receives from the Western partners.
So the budget that the West gives Ukraine, where does it exactly go?
Well, it goes to all non-military expenses like health system, education, pensions. But the worse our economy works, the less money we have to fight. It's just simple as that. Before a Russian full-scale invasion to Ukraine, its economy was 10 times bigger than Ukrainian.
Wow.
That is why we need all this help. That is why we would probably not survive these 2 years without this help. So the war, huge migration, millions of Ukrainians, according to the estimations of the United Nations, and mobilization withdrew people from economy. We've lost about one-third of the pre-war working force if we compare it to, for example, 2021. And if we deduct this number on civil servants, teachers, medics, all who receive their salaries from the budget, now we have only 6 million workforce in real economy who actually produces the money to pump into economy and to finance front and the army. So these are numbers.
So how are businesses coping? What is going on to survive and to keep these wheels turning?
Well, strangely enough, so far the only thing which business could afford is to raise the salary. I know it sounds mad and it sounds paradoxical that in war it's very difficult for business to raise salaries in peaceful times, but it's just the only way to keep your business afloat for some businesses.
So they are raising salaries to attract people to come and work.
Yes,
and stay
yes, yes. It's just one way that business is using in trying to attract more people.
I understand that the government is also trying different avenues to attract people to the workforce. And one of them is actually migrant workers and raising the taxes.
Well, yes. But first of all, it's not only government, but also business. Because I heard from some businesses in logistics and in retail that they are already trying to attract migrants. But problem number one is that Ukraine has no direct air connection to the rest of the world because of the war. So potential migrant workers have to have not only working visa for Ukraine, but also transit visas for the neighboring countries. The other problem is that the average salary in Ukraine, it has been raised, but it's still very low. Even migrants from Central Asia, countries like Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan, they would probably choose to go to richer Europe than to work in Ukraine, especially in war. Mm.
Ilona, I want to come to you right now. I know you spoke to some women who are stepping in and doing the jobs that are traditionally male-dominated jobs. What did they have to tell you? And give me some examples.
Because of risk that all male will go to war, the employers begin to hire women. They begin to advertise some male professions and so on. And I talked to some women who already chosen such profession. For example, very interesting case about a lorry driver. So this is a woman. She told me that she always dreamed to be a lorry driver, but she had small kids and her husband was against this decision. But now she said, like, my mom mommy is helping me with the kids. And now she's already for a year working as a driver, and she's very happy at her job. I asked her to show me some pictures if she has, and she sent me like bunch of pictures, bunch of selfies, like, this is my car, this is my wheels. And I'm really happy for her, you know.
Wow, she's doing her dream job. I don't blame her. Any other examples?
I know also a very interesting example. It is near Lviv. It is a plant of a chemical, like paints or something, chemical materials. And the two main people from their plant, they went to the army voluntarily. And they had a big problem because like they don't have a head of production anymore. And at that moment, the woman came who wanted to be a technologist. So she's a chemist, and they understood that it's an opportunity for them to hire her, but not as a technologist, but as a head of production. And they offered her such a high position, and she had experience in such field, but she didn't have such enough experience. So, you know, it was a big step in her career.
And now to all of you, I just want to know, you know, I can imagine this, these whole new conscription laws, everything. These are sensitive topics, but what are you hearing from the people? What are they talking about?
I think it depends very much on the personal situation of people, to be honest. Like those people who have close friends, relatives, husbands, fathers, brothers near the front line, they are more inclined to criticize those people who are avoiding military service. Those people for whom people from the military service are still a bit remote reality, they are more inclined to protect their beloved and to say, like, but we are doing a lot here. We are donating to the army. We are paying taxes. We are working hard to support economy. And again, in one of the stories that we published on our website, we had a case where a woman now is very protective towards her husband. She doesn't want him to be conscripted because her father has recently died while serving in the Eastern Ukraine.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Anastasia, any observations from you?
Well, probably like I said, that I think there is a feeling in society, in business, everywhere that everyone is exhausted and everyone has come to his own limits. Everyone is very tired. I don't even want to think of the consequences, but everyone has come to the limits. And from my own probably bubble, I would say that economic analytics and experts, probably recent month or two, they really like to repeat the phrase, battles are won by people and wars by economists. And I think that probably in the society, not among the economists, but in the society, there's rising understanding of it.
Ilona, what about you?
Yeah, I could say, can say the same, that our society is very exhausted, and this decision about conscription, it divides like society. And as Daria said, that the families who members of these families are in the army, they are more used to like to be angry at those men who are not in the army yet. But I would not say that it's the same everywhere, because, for example, those wives or kids of these men who are in the army, they know what this means. They don't desire other people to be in such situation. So I would say situation is very complicated, and also it's very toxic, you know. For example, when you go to the social media, like every discussion, if it's some man goes to the discussion, another woman can answer him, why are you not in the trenches? Why not in the army? Like, so what are you doing at home? Yeah, it's very hard to live like this. I cannot even imagine how this atmosphere is for men.
Thank you, Daria Taradai, Anastasia Zanuda, and Ilona Khromluk for joining me. I'm Farnak Hamidi, and the Fifth Floor team was Hannah Dean and Caroline Ferguson. The studio manager was Tim Heffer. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodovnik. Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about unexpected science history.
Well, that's unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.